Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. I have a special guest tonight, a guy who we just talked to each other about how we've known each other for 15 years, and this Zoom-ish call is the first time we've ever seen each other. So joining me is Andrew Lawrence. Drew is a freelance writer. He's written for Sports Illustrated, The Guardian, The Atlantic, The Athletic, I've heard of that, The Dallas Morning News, The Associated Press, Fortune, Southern Living, Austin Monthly, Complex, Cookie, BET.com, ESPN.com, and The Classical. He is based in Beaufort, South Carolina. And you can find him on the Twitters at @by_Drew. So welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So I think right now most people can find your stuff on The Guardian, right? Is that the place you write the most?
Most regularly I'm there.
And you
snarking away.
And you write about all kinds of stuff like F1 and and you wrote a thing about the 1904 St. Louis Olympics that just it was just crazy. So I want to talk about that in a minute, but I thought you could be my Olympics expert.
Okay,
Just have to all you have to do is be smarter about the Olympics than me, which is not a not a high bar to clear. So the Olympics actually have started. They started this morning.
Yeah.
When I woke up, the women's soccer team had already lost. But the opening ceremonies.
And the softball team is playing now, I think.
Oh.
And America versus Canada, I think, if my Olympic channels here are correct. And
I think that's
they're just starting. And I didn't realize that they are actually playing in Fukushima. I thought they were just like opening Fukushima up to just sort of show the world like, hey, we've recovered from the nuclear disaster, not like come play come play on Isotope Field.
That's right.
This is like a totally this is a total surprise. So
come see our three-eyed fish.
Right. It's like you thought the COVID was going to be the problem. Well, check back with us in five years.
The COVID can't kill you if the radioactive fish get you first.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant plan. It really is. So the opening ceremonies are Friday morning, our time.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
So there, if anybody needs their bearings about the Olympics. So these obviously are the – so are they trying to pass – are these the 2020 – Olympics? Are we doing the Euro thing like it was the 2020
yes.
Euro in 2000?
Yeah.
Is it because they already had the medals made and they just didn't want to have to like scratch a one onto them?
I would have respected that more if they were like, I know we spent $17 billion on branding, but I need we need like our whiteout and Sharpie team to go out and just like scratch ones into everything that's ending in a zero. No, they're still the 2020 Olympics, even though, that time has passed.
Oh, that's great. So obviously they got postponed an entire year because of COVID. And now I think COVID is actually worse in Japan than it was last year.
It's much, much worse in the world. We got three spinoffs. And last I check, I think less than a third of their population is vaccinated because they fumbled their rollout even worse than we did, if you can even imagine that. And then I was reading a Michael Rosenberg piece, I guess the first piece he's done from Tokyo, and he's like, yeah, if you're an essential worker, which I guess the media technically qualifies as, you can skip the whole like quarantining for 2 weeks thing and just like get to work. But they're like, you know, certain zones within the Olympics where reporters can go, but there's still like a gathering in mass there. So it's only a matter of time before, 70 cases become 700, become 7,000.
Well, so Zach LaVine just finally got to leave for Tokyo today. He got cleared. Yeah. Coco Gauff can't compete because she tested positive. Nobody's sure if she's vaccinated or not. We're just going to continue to see this stuff.
Bradley Beal's out.
That's right.
The finalists are going over today, so we'll see what they catch on the way, what they caught on the way through that, like, that 80,000 deep mob in Milwaukee to the airport. It's going to be real interesting to see how cases sort of affect competition.
Somebody pointed out that must be a fun flight for Devin Booker to be flying out with Middleton and Drew Holiday and have them go, oh, sorry, do we still smell like champagne? I'm sorry.
Right, yeah. Sorry. God, these clothes. I'd change, but... But I checked my bags. You see.
Do you, Devin? Would you like a T-shirt and a hat? No, would not. Knock it off.
Or they could be real dicks and like show them the Suns championship shirts and hats that are like we saved one before they shipped. We shipped them to Zimbabwe. You know, you can have one. Just but it's yours. You can't tell anybody else that you have this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a guy who, it's funny, I grew up and you'd go into random friends' basements and their dad would have like a 1984 Cubs NL Champions pennant. Those things made it everywhere. Even though,
right.
And for a long time, that's all we ever had. So that was great.
Yeah.
So, obviously the Olympics have become more, it's not news to anybody. They're a huge TV show. And nothing makes it more obvious that it's a huge TV show than, well, we're not going to be able to have fans there. And we're not even, the competitors, we're not even going to let their families come over.
Right.
Should we do this? Well, yes, because we need to cash the TV. In fact, we've probably already cashed the TV checks. So we don't want to refund that.
Right. So. And not only that, like, the Olympic Village becomes... luxury condos on like August 14th. So we, even if we wanted to do it in 2022, we couldn't because it'd be a totally different facility. Yeah, they've just screwed the pooch like 17 different ways by going through with this.
So if you
and yet I feel like there might have been a point during COVID where they were like, if we stop now, we can like. We can stanch the bleeding. Like, we can recover. Like, these are the minimum number of losses that we'll take if we just say we're not going to do it. And then some politician was like, but we have to do it.
Yeah.
And then it became like, point of no return.
And it seems crazy that of all the countries that have botched this, that it would be Japan. They just, they feel like they would have their shit together. I mean, I had to sit through one of the places I worked. I had to sit through like 8 hours of Toyota Kata training where they taught you how to be the most efficient worker you possibly could. I would not have expected that they couldn't manage to get everybody vaccinated in time.
I would have thought they would have had a very nice and orderly system for doing it. It's like as easy as buying a car, which apparently is like a valet service there where like somebody comes up to your house. Like you don't even go into a dealership. Some guy comes up to you and it's kind of like how I guess we've sort of made car purchasing with like Carvana and services like that. They had that like in the 80s. I just assumed like, hey, do you want to, something comes in the mail and they check yes. And then, 2 days later, a guy shows up at their door and, gives them like the valet server that he can get the shot right in their living room. And then, he comes back like a month later and then it's done. But apparently,
I mean, I would have thought they'd have people in those weird, like anime costumes. just running around jabbing random people on the sidewalk and giving them a sticker.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been trying to buy a PlayStation 5 and I can't get one. And so I kind of feel like that's a fair trade-off. If I can't get a PlayStation 5, you guys can't have fans at anything at the Olympics. It's going to make it feel better. It's going to seem really weird considering now that we're just used to having people at sporting events again. And now we're going to go back to 2 weeks.
And we've only had them back for like a month.
Yeah.
And it's still like such a drastic change. Like even just like the finals, watching the finals this year versus like, I cannot believe we just like accepted LeBron getting a trophy in an empty gym last year. We're like, this is historic. It's like, no, not what now. It's like, you know, cut to, you know, 80,000 people outside of like the Milwaukee stadium, Pfizer Forum, in addition to the full arena. And it's like, that is how it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife saw the scenes from that last night and went, how many of those people do you think are vaccinated? I'm like, you're not there, don't worry about it. Just suspend disbelief.
Surefire super spreader event.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in Wisconsin.
Yeah right.
I don't know, maybe they haven't done tests on this, but it could be that the residue, any of the beer or any of the deer urine that they still have on their hunting clothes, that may counteract it. That may find out that everybody was safe because of that. If you can put up with the smell.
It should at least enforce some like post-championship social distancing, but I don't know.
So I wonder if you bought one of the condos that currently is the Olympic Village, do you get the cardboard bed? Do they leave that for you?
I just wrote a column for tomorrow on sex at the Olympics and how they're trying to stop, you know, the most happening hookup scene of the last 50 years.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're going to give you like, I mean, it's like they're giving out 160,000 condoms and saying, take these home to show other people how to practice safe sex. And it's just like, 4 years ago, Rio gave away like 500,000 of these things to the point where they had like a guy with a clear bag full of condoms walking around that you could just stop and say, and just like reach in and grab a fistful. Like, this is the population that we're talking about. And it's like, really? You expect these people to have sex? You think a bed is going to deter like the 20th best gymnast in the world from finding a way to hook up with like the 16th best archer? Like, come on.
Yeah. It's funny when they showed that, all I could think of was, I don't know if you've seen, the second season of, I Think You Should Leave, but it's a coffin flop situation where somebody's going to lay on that thing and roll over just wrong in the middle of the night alone and just, they're going to find out that someone injured themselves and can't compete in their event because their cardboard bed broke. They're going to be like, honest, I swear I was by myself. It would have been more fun the other way, but I was alone. So one of the things, there was a huge story a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. I time means nothing to me.
Yeah, I know.
When Sha'Carri Richardson failed the drug test for the noted performance enhancer, marijuana.
Marijuana, yes.
So now
we've all taken it, and just
I've never run faster than when. It's amazing. I
ran so fast it felt like I was sitting down.
That's right. I ran all the way around the world, and I was got immediately back to the same spot on the couch that I was laying. So it's crazy to me. Clearly, the issue is, why is that on the list?
Yeah.
Why has that not been taken off the banned list? It did not surprise me though that I think in this case it's still because it was at the trials it was still USADA that was in charge of this.
Yeah.
So I have a friend who was a drug test facilitator for USADA, and there would be places she would go where the athletes were going to be male, where she needed someone to go by and observe. Someone had to go with her to observe. I did that on several. I still have a USADA polo shirt that I had to wear.
Wow.
I will tell you that if this was probably somewhere in the between 1998 and 2000, if you were a long track speed skater who competed in Milwaukee, chances are you could have broken out the Wizinator when I was, because I couldn't pay that much attention. I just couldn't. Yeah. It's like, all right, let's go into the thing. The thing that was the biggest pain in the ass for more for the athletes than for me was, so the way it works is some people are just randomly picked, and then some people are assigned by where they finish in the race. It's to keep it so nobody really knows if you're going to get tested or not.
Right.
So they, I don't know how long it takes to do one of these races, but they're exhausted and dehydrated when they're done. And then it's like, oh, and Andy here needs to go watch you pee.
Right.
And they're like, well, I don't have to pee. And then the one thing they can't do is you can't just like drink a bunch of Gatorade, because we had to do two things. Number one was had to observe them, but then she had to check and make sure she could do a quick check to see if the sample was too diluted to be good.
Right.
And if it was, then they'd have to wait around for another one. Even creepier than that was, a couple of times I had to go out with her where we did surprise visits we had to just find them and do it. And so they literally had to fill out like a diary of where they were, where they expected to be, because once we showed up, they had an hour to get there. They didn't have to be able to whiz within an hour, but they had to be there within an hour, or it was a failed test. If you skip it, that's treated as a skip test. So we'd be like, going to the Milwaukee suburbs and, ringing a doorbell, and then this sheer panic. Oh my God, he's at the movies. And she's like, well, I hate to tell you this. We're going to have to go get him. And then they'd have to. It was terrible. She told the story about, she was at the 96 Olympics in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool parts of it were she got to just, because she was there and working there, she got to meet Dream Team 2. Like she showed me pictures of her with Charles Barkley and all that stuff. They weren't testing at the time. Charles was fully clothed. Mm. But she got assigned an athlete from the marathon. And once that person finished the marathon, Susie had to shadow her until she could actually produce a sample. So the marathon, obviously they run in the morning. It should probably be done by 10 o'clock in the morning. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning the next day before, she'd run a marathon. She couldn't manage. Yeah. And Susie had to go with her to her room, she wanted to go to sleep. So Susie had to be in the room with her while she slept, because you can't lose contact with the person, because who knows what they could do, once they're out of sight. So everybody was going through this thing about, well, I can't believe they won't just change this thing. I'm like, well, that is an organization that loves the most complicated rules they can possibly inflict upon people. So it really didn't surprise me. There's no getting out of it. If marijuana is on the list, there's no way you're going to get around that. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't be on the list, but it is for some ridiculous reason.
Well, the ridiculous reason is that is political, of course, because everything's political. And I guess that, the United States was helping to fund and to build WADA, one of their prime objectives was to, this like in the middle of the, in the tail end of the war on drugs, and how they wanted to really use like Olympic athletes as like exemplars for, clean living. And even though like nobody within the scientific drug testing community was pushing to put marijuana on the banned substance list, the U.S. insisted on putting it there as like a political reason to show that, to discourage kids from using it recreationally.
That's just great.
Which brings it totally full circle to a woman grieving the loss of her biological mother and needing something, to settle the nerves from that blow, and ends up using it. And like, it's hard not to sympathize with her.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Also sort of be critical of the fact that like this, this is the one thing you can't use. But at the same time, to come back around and be like, why the hell is this still on the list? It's ridiculous. And the fact that you're like competing in Oregon, where it's, you know, not only legal, but a thriving industry now, and being decriminalized all over the country. But yeah, it's I feel bad for her. But I also don't totally buy the notion that, you know, this is like a lost gold medal for the United States, because, you know, like Jamaica is still, their team is still like loaded and, you know, including
maybe,
like,
maybe literally.
Yes. And I feel like some of that was, you know, some of the marijuana legislation is like kind of aimed at countries like Jamaica, where that's sort of like a very much a known commodity. But yeah, it's just a weird rule. One of many weird sort of arcane things that this, you know, that the Olympic organizers and authorities are sort of still clinging to, despite, you know, many easier and smoother ways of like doing things, like even drug testing. Like, how is it still done like that after all these years? How is there not like some, you know, neater, cleaner way of, you know, being able to execute that without it being creepy as hell?
It was incredibly creepy. It was creepy for it was creepy for me, and that's all I'm really worried about. It was creepy for the athletes. I'm going to call Dick Pound, and we're gonna sort this out. And she said, no, you can't call Dick Pound. I said, I just want to, because I just like to say Dick Pound.
Yeah.
He was, for you people just, who don't know that, that was the guy's actual name. He was in charge of the U.S. Anti-Doping Association.
Just want to be able to call a switchboard and say, get me Dick Pound.
Get me Dick Pound. Stat. No, like, yeah, no. Andy, is that you again? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So I've had this, I have all kinds of good ideas, and no one listens to my good ideas. So I'm going to run one by you. Now, one of the things,
please,
we have problems, Juan Antonio Samaranch or whoever, I don't know who's in charge of the Olympics now. He's been dead for like 20 years.
He just got in trouble. I can't think of his name.
Of course, they all get
it'll
in trouble.
Come to me.
So anyway,
because he called the Japanese Chinese in his latest remarks, and he said a bunch of other stuff. And,
why would you know which country you're going to that's paying you? I don't know how many billions of dollars. But yeah, you shouldn't be able to actually get the country. You shouldn't have to get the country name right. That's too far.
That's way too big an ask. Thomas Bach. That's who it is.
That's right. I did know that. Yeah. So one of the issues they've had, and I think they have it more with the Winter Olympics than they do with the Summer Olympics, is finding a city that's willing to host it, and that's why they end up like the Winter Olympics, which now are next year.
Yeah.
Are in Beijing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know a lot about geography. I don't think like ski resorts. And when I think of Beijing, also, they just had an Olympics where they had to pretend that they weren't doing human rights violations everywhere. And then they built all these temporary buildings that they tore down.
Buildings out of paper that have just blown away. And yeah. But the bird's nest, we got to get one more good use out of the bird's nest. And who knows if we'll be having people there.
Yeah, I mean it's not that far off, and pretty sure. I think they had a few COVID cases in China. I think they did.
I think I did hear about that. Yeah.
So I think one of the problems is, and we found this out when Chicago was trying to get an Olympics, and they had these grand plans. Oh, well, all we need to do is we need to build this, and we need to build this, and we need to build this, and then we're going to turn this into that.
We really dodged the bullet there, didn't we? Remember, it was like, they lost that bid, and then Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize like within hours of that going sideways. It was the weirdest like 36 hours, I think, of his early presidency.
They were going to build like a temporary stadium on the lakefront that was for the opening and closing ceremonies and the track and field and all that. Just ridiculous amounts of money. I guess they had to build a velodrome somewhere.
Expand the subway system, I think, was like a big thing. They're like, no, no, this will be good. Like, the L's been needing these upgrades for a while.
Yeah, this is the only way we could possibly do it, is to have the Olympics. It's like, Right. Yeah. I think if you wanted to fix the L, you got to fix the fucking L.
Right.
I don't think you need the Olympics for that.
Yeah.
Why do the Olympics have to be in a single city?
Yeah.
Why can't a country host the Olympics, where you already have the stuff? Now, I know it would kind of, some of the traditions obviously would get, well, though traditions this year are getting blown away. Like, it used to be until this year that when you had an opening ceremony, there were actually people there, and they got to watch, right, instead of marching through an empty stadium. See, that would be like the thing. It's like, well, if they're scattered all over the country, what are the opening and closing ceremonies going to look like? I don't know. Maybe you can do them different. How about that? That might be something you could do. Because it's just, there are plenty of countries that could easily host these every 4 years without having to go to the expense of building all this extra crap. But it's not that easy to find cities that can do it, or at least cities that can do it who are willing to do it.
Yeah.
So what we've got, Paris is in 24, LA is 28. So they don't have to worry about this for a while. But that was my little idea. It's like, all right, stop with the narrow thinking.
And those weren't even bids. They just said, you know what, we're not even going to bother with that whole process. Let's just pick two towns that we know can handle it.
Basically,
but I'm with you. I feel like they should, you know, if you're gonna bring it back to Greece, you should have just made Greece Olympic land.
Yeah.
And you know, have it be a place where the world converges every 2 years or whatever, and just have the whole thing there. Like bankrupting one country after another, taking this thing on the road is just like, why?
So 84 was supposedly that was going to be the Olympics to turn it around, because LA turned a profit, supposedly.
Yeah.
And then Peter Ueberroth got to be the commissioner of baseball after that, and they screwed that up. They find out, it's like anything else in sports. Like, oh, we need to build a new stadium on our riverfront / lakefront / whatever your body of water is, and then, right, oh my god, just the economic impact, it's going to be in the trillions.
Oh, it's going to bring so many.
Oh my god, how you're a moron if you don't do this. In fact, honest, let's build three stadiums. Let's just build them right next to each other. It'd be great. And then of course they build them, and then everybody's like, well, you know, oh, that's, we didn't meet any of our projections. Well, that's too bad. But we got the stadium that we soaked the taxpayers for.
And then 20 years later, can we have a new stadium? Yeah. Please?
Oh, this one's old. We can't. Yeah, like the Texas Rangers. Built a brand new stadium right next to the old one. Yeah. They just sit there next to each other. And it's like, which one's the new one? They both look nice. It's like, yeah, because that one wasn't that old. They should have put a roof on the first one, but they didn't need to build an entire stadium just because, like, nobody knew that it got hot in Texas in the summer.
Yeah.
They hadn't been playing baseball there for 50 years before they built that stadium. But
They didn't even pioneer dome stadiums in the state of Texas. It was like a totally new and different idea.
A roof? No, that's impossible.
No, can't do it.
Yeah, the Astrodome, they were still doing, the Astros have been long gone, and they were still selling tours of the eighth wonder of the world. Come see the Astrodome.
The eighth wonder of the world couldn't even house a Houston Texans practice. Right now, you know, it's just like when you think of the Dallas Cowboys practice facility, which is like, you know, nicer than most, you know, college football stadiums.
Yeah,
and then they actually play their games at some other place that's, you know, gargantuan. It's like
they play some of the Texas high school playoff games in the Star, and then but of course they don't play the championships there. They have to play that in the Jerry Dome. Because you know, it's a championship game. We can't play it in this perfectly sized stadium that we've been playing these other games in. We need to go into the 110,000 seat stadium. And I know they get big crowds for Texas high school football, but it's still ridiculous that they feel the need.
They're not getting 100,000 for a Texas high school football game or championship.
I don't think.
Not to see Jerry's grandkid, you know, slinging around the ball yard. Wasn't it like he had a kid that was like a really good quarterback for a while?
What is his name? Chris, he's Texan. He's got two names. It's like John something Jones, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was supposed to be, he was supposedly good. I don't know where he signed. A&M, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
So these Olympics, the ones that have that are actually going on as we speak, obviously they're going to be weird. one of the things I'm interested in is NBC's coverage of it. You know, I'm sure we're still going to get, they had time to send everybody out and do the amber-hued, tinkly music stories about what this person overcame. But they can't you can't ignore COVID. Yeah. It's a huge part of the Olympics. The Olympics were postponed for a whole year. Obviously, there's athletes who had it who are still, you know, feeling effects of it. But the other thing is, as much as this is already going to be the COVID Olympics, everything can't be COVID. I mean, people who watch the human interest thing, after a while, they're like, all right, another one of these?
Yeah.
Plus the fact we've got, a good 40% of the country that doesn't think it's actually a thing. So I would be interested to see how much they have to, you can't ignore it, but they also can't, dwell on it. And I also feel bad, where did they get to send, what kind of fun stuff did Mary Carrillo get to do? Everything's closed.
I was just watching her, badminton rant.
Yes. Oh my God. Mary Carrillo is a national treasure. They gave her, that was from Athens. And,
so good.
They basically let her host the late night show. And she had 3 minutes to kill before they could send it to anything. And she went on this rant about how much recreational badminton sucks. And and it was great. And she said afterwards that it was all off the top of her head. And it's amazing because it's such a well-constructed story. Clearly, she told a version of that story to someone else before. And she just embellished it. But it was really good. So I saw that today, so I retweeted that, and then they linked to an old Deadspin 1.0 article about it, where Mary emailed them back an explanation of the story, and then at the bottom put, "Oh, by the way, did you find my Zamboni thing from whatever the next Olympics was?" And they found the video for that. It's also very funny. She's interviewing whichever Winter Olympics were in Italy. Was that Torino?
Oh, Turin, yeah.
Turin. And not Gran Torino? No, it's not the same.
Same place. Same
okay,
place.
Good.
You're saying it the Italian way, I'm saying it the American way.
Well, I'm obviously super Italian. So she's riding around on the Zamboni interviewing the Zamboni driver, who clearly has been fed what his jokes are supposed to be, but it's still really, really funny. So I've always enjoyed Mary Carrillo, and this is the one of her specialties is they send her out to, it's basically if
they throw in the water and they see if she can swim.
Yeah, basically she goes to all the cliche things. Like if she was from a different country and the Olympics were in Seattle, she would have to do three minutes on catching the fish down at the
right. Yeah.
She would have to do that.
Yeah.
But they send her otherwise, and despite the fact that they give her these kind of rote things, she always delivers. So we'll see how they use Mary. Hopefully they were able to send her out to do fun stuff before Tokyo locked everything down again. It was really surreal to see there were reporters who were sending out pictures from their hotel room of what should be rush hour in Tokyo, and there was nobody. It was just
nobody.
It was exactly like we were back in March last year. Where there was just everybody's in their house. It's crazy to think that they waited an entire year and they're still doing that.
They're still doing it, and the country hates the idea even more than they did when COVID broke out. You know, it's just like all of these polls are just like, get this thing out. Like, why are we doing this? You're going to kill all of us. It's just like, you know, why do bad things keep happening to us? Like, go get this thing out of here.
So, the men's basketball team did not get off to a great start during their tune-ups.
No.
And part of it, I mean, the excuse you were going to use, I watched some of the games. They were on NBC Sports Network. And I was watching some of the games. And there were guys playing for them who I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
The tip-off is, I don't know if this is still an Olympic thing. Our Olympic team still does it, where it used to be that you only got numbers 4 through 15.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Jordan was 9 and Scotty was 8 and whatever.
Right.
We still do that. I think it's still Olympic. I think everybody still does it that way. There was a tip-off when they're playing, and all of a sudden there's like number 45 playing for us. And it was because we didn't have our full complement of guys yet, because some of them were still playing in the NBA playoffs. There were... And so it's like, well, this isn't really the team, but it's like, yeah, but should we be losing these tune-up games? Probably
not.
It
still had Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and, you know, like some stud players. And I don't know. Somebody made the point the other day that, like, not only are other has, like, the world sort of caught up to the U.S. Federation. I mean, you know, what we just had, like, a Greek-Nigerian you know, to win like the basketball triple crown. But like, you know, every guy that we pick to be on, you know, USA basketball is used to being the first or second option on their team. And so when you're like asking a guy to just be available for a catch and shoot or to set a screen or to box out or whatever, that's like not part of the program. So it's like, you know, should we be loading these teams with all stars when we're going into competition that's going to involve like more team play, more like group defense, more just sort of like collectivism instead of like, because we can't get by just like, you know, blowing by the rest of the world because like they're on those teams. They know their moves. They, you know, they're scouting you, you know, day after day in the NBA. So you don't have that sort of, you know, you're not as good as us, and you've never played against us before. Thing going anymore.
So I wonder what a workable alternative to that would be. One of the things I think of is so like when I was playing little league baseball, when I was like there was our 13-14 year old team. We qualified for the state tournament. We won whatever our little conferencing was called, and we qualified for the state tournament. And then we got to take 4 players off other teams in our league, and they joined our team to go down for the state tournament. We still got our ass kicked. One of my fondest memories of that was we picked this pitcher who we all hated. He was a dick, and we're like, why are we picking him? And so we're playing our first game in Springfield, and I'm playing third base, and he's pitching, and the second batter hits a home run that goes over the fence, over the fence of the house behind the field into their pool. The very next pitch he throws, the next guy hits a home run, and so I walked up to the mound. Our manager was coming out to talk to him, and I said, "Well, at least that one didn't get wet." We didn't really get along after that. So I wonder if one of the things you could do would be to take an existing NBA team and do that. Like we're going to take, and I don't know how you would do this. If I was Bill Simmons, I'm sure has given this a lot of thought. He could probably tell. Like you could take the teams.
Like you take the Warriors in their peak year.
Well, I don't even know. Yeah, you could do that. You could like take you could just say, all right, we're going to take the NBA champions and we're going to reserve 3 spots on the roster and they're going to get to pick other NBA players to fill out their roster to make them super unbeatable. They can worry about guys who fit their style, who do whatever, and we'll soup up this one team. Or it could be that you're like, okay, the NBA, by the time you win the NBA title, you're wiped.
Yeah.
So maybe we don't take, maybe if you don't make the conference finals, we have another little tournament, and those teams are playing to be the Olympic team. So you didn't make the conference finals. You're not going to win the NBA title this year, but you can still do this cool thing where you win this little tournament of maybe 4 teams. You're going to be the Olympic team, and then you were going to pull a couple of other players from around the league to join your team and go over and kick ass.
Right.
It might not be.
Yeah, they should have just taken the Nets core and added, like, you know, 4 guys who can actually play or 5 guys who can actually play some defense and mix and match rotations just based on that big 3. That I feel like would have been plenty. But I think, you know, like does Bradley Beal fit playing alongside Kevin Durant as well as Kyrie Irving does? I mean, I don't know. It just feels like, is Kyrie on the team? I don't even know. I haven't.
He's not.
That. I don't, okay. But like, you know, it just seems like, yeah, it should be a lot. I feel like they're overcomplicated.
Well, and we even talked about it. So this year, this team, 3 guys, the Olympics have technically started. We got three guys that, this as of maybe right now, are in the air, flying over there to join the team. Yeah. They haven't practiced with them. They haven't done anything. And, they're just a quarter of the roster is about to.
As you noted, is exhausted from just having finished a six-game series, a finals series. Yeah.
So, and a quarter of our team has not actually arrived yet. They're just going to show up and get just incorporated right into it. It doesn't seem like the greatest thing. Now, I know, obviously, this year was is completely different than normal because the finals were so much later than they should be. Right. Typically, you're not going to run into this. The other thing I've never understood is why basketball is a summer Olympic game.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's a winter sport,
in the
I guess.
Fall and winter,
Do you have to have does ice have to be involved in it? Somewhere you have to freeze some kind of precipitation.
Yeah. Some kind of hardship. Yeah.
Because one of the things you could do, they should flip hockey. They should make hockey a summer sport and make basketball. That doesn't really work for basketball, as I was thinking. Actually, hockey would, it would eliminate, maybe they should just make hockey a summer sport because it doesn't matter when you play it. So then it's not being, that tournament isn't being played in the middle of their season.
Right.
You could have, you'd have a much better Olympic hockey tournament if you played that in the summer when the teams aren't all actually, they don't have to stop their regular season to send everybody over to play. Cause that's,
and then, guys don't have to leave early from other countries to, to join their teams.
Because it always it's a big deal every time they renegotiate the CBA and the NHL as to what they're, how they're going to handle the Olympics. Cause, some teams and some players want to go. Other teams and other players, some teams don't want their guys going over. They don't want, if they're going to get hurt in the middle of the season, they don't want to get hurt playing for them. They don't want them getting hurt, you know, playing for free for some. Oh, they don't play for free, but they don't play for much.
Not as much as they're getting paid by the NHL or in the NHL.
So, I will admit these Olympics have kind of snuck up on me, and I feel like I don't know as much about the competitors. And did I see lacrosse is a sport now? Is an Olympic sport? And it's an Olympic sport now, like in Tokyo. Did they just like
surfing
decide that
Olympic
like yesterday?
Too.
But it seemed like they were like
X gamification continues with the Olympics.
Yeah, lacrosse. Actually, I'm honestly, when I heard that, I'm like, wasn't that already one? I mean, we had team handball. We didn't have lacrosse.
Yeah.
So team handball, it's a cliche, team handball every year. It is kind of, that's a sport I will actually watch during the Olympics. I watch it like, oh, this is kind of screwed. And it's one of those things, I think people have the same conversation about like soccer. And it's like, what if we took like our, especially for team handball, what if we took 12 NBA players and for like 2 weeks taught them how to play team handball and then sent them over as our team?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And it's the same, people talk about that with like soccer too, which would be, you know, most of our elite athletes would be amazing soccer players. They just stop playing soccer when they're little kids. They get shoehorned into one other sport and they go play that forever. I have no idea where I was going with any of that, but.
I like the idea of, because that, you know, apart from like super specialized things like swimming and gymnastics, the idea of, you know, a player you know and is from a certain sport doing a different thing. Like as I was writing this thing today, I didn't realize that the shirtless Tongan guy, the Taekwondo guy, like competed in the Winter Olympics as like a cross country skier. That's cool.
Yeah.
But it would be cool if like he'd come back, you know, like you get him in the Olympics and he's like doing, water polo or I don't know, something that's just like, oh, wow, that guy, I know that guy from that other thing.
Yes, we've got the, I can't think of his name, the guy who played second base for the Marlins last year, who has been a speed skater and is going to play, because baseball's back.
Yeah.
So now he's already participated in a Winter Olympics, and now he's going to play in a Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
The return of baseball completely caught me off guard, too. I mean, it was such a huge deal when they dropped baseball and softball. And then they bring it back, and it's, I mean, it makes sense they would bring him back for Japan. Japan loves baseball. Of course, they'd want to have a baseball tournament. But then it happens during the middle of the season, and so we've got, like, washed up guys hanging out. Like, Todd Frazier is on the he got cut by the Pirates, like, 2 months ago, and now he's going to go play in the Olympics instead. That seems like a much better deal than having to play for the Pirates. Okay, so I teased this. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the article you wrote, the column you wrote on the 1904 St. Louis Olympics, and I'll link to it when I put up the when I post this, because you drew some parallels to the kind of should we be doing this nature of the 04 Olympics to the I guess the 2021 Olympics. And a lot of that was, well, how much of that should we do this was travel related in 1904?
A lot of it. Like, before that, the Olympics had never, the modern Olympics, the two that preceded it had all taken place in Europe. So the idea of traveling to the new world in 1904 was, you know, like at least a couple of weeks on a ship. You know, it's like, you know, that's a pretty big enterprise. So, you know, you figure like, you travel by ship, logically, you would, to make it convenient for the Europeans, you would have it somewhere on the Atlantic coast. Mm-hmm. So at least that part of the travel isn't hard. But instead, no, let's have it in the gateway to the west, in the in St. Louis, Missouri, you know, that shining, you know, cosmopolitan international city. There. And it's like, so then there was this whole other thing that people had to figure out, like how to get into the middle of the country in 1904. Not very many nations came. So it was pretty much just like one giant U.S. trials. The issues around facilities, were sort of persisted during that time, but it was like, you know, the track didn't have lanes, and, you know, the lake where the swimming competitions were held wasn't level, or wasn't, you know, it was like totally out of spec, and, you know, they were just sort of like inventing this thing as they went along. You had like a gymnast who was competing on a wooden leg, and a boxer under a false name, and it was just totally wide open, and it all sort of exploded spectacularly in the marathon, where like most of the field were rank amateurs, and you know, guys who, you know, the marathon distance had not yet been set, it wasn't standardized all over the world, so you had people who were coming in having won a trial that was like 8 miles long, and now they're being expected to run 25. And just to make things fun and interesting, the guy who was running the marathon competition decided, like, oh, wouldn't it be fun if we just if we only allowed water breaks at 2 mile intervals in the throughout the whole race. So you know, you had competitors who were like literally breaking down on the side of the road from exhaustion. And then that was the other thing. The roads were, in addition to being like various elevations and cobblestone streets, were mostly like covered in like thick dust that, oh, by the way, was being kicked up from all of the totally normal traffic that was happening around St. Louis, because life had to go on, and we're not roping this off because, like, you know, the blacksmith still has to like get, you know, the coaches in to work on and all this stuff. So you have world-class athletes who are supposed to be running a race that's like full of inhaling dust and and you know, guys who are getting chased off of the course by wild dogs.
By dogs, that was my favorite part. The guy ran an extra mile, right, because the dogs chased him off the course, and then he had to find his way back onto it.
And then one guy thought he would be a prankster and just like hitch a ride to the stadium and, you know, get off just before it and run the rest of it and make it look like he was winning the race, even though nobody at the time thought to question how a man could complete a marathon, a 24 mile race. And around 3 hours, but they were all ready to give him a gold medal for winning until somebody like who had seen him get in the car called him out on it.
And then you said he pretended that it was all a gag then. Yeah, oh, I was just kidding.
I was just kidding.
Teddy Roosevelt's daughter is about to put a medal around his neck, and he's like, "Oh, I was just kidding. Yeah. I may have hopped right.
It's just a joke. It's just a goof." And then also alongside that, they have like literally an oppression Olympics where they invite a bunch of Native American tribes because they're The 1904 Olympics was held in conjunction with that year's World Fair, and the theme for that World's Fair was the centennial of the Louisiana Purchase. And so as part of that, they held like an oppression Olympics where they invited a bunch of Native American tribes to compete in events like dancing and mudslinging and every sort of like, you know, demeaning sort of stereotypical subhuman event that you could possibly think of. But also try out some Olympic style sports, even though these people had not trained, were not classically trained as athletes, and then that gave the white sports writers at the time a license to write about how you know inferior these tribes people were at Olympic sports, and caused a furor back at home with the then IOC director, who was like, This is insane. I can't believe that this has happened. And it's only a matter of time before, you know, people of color are like, you know, fully vested competitors and kicking ass on the same field. So it was sort of he had a nice prescient moment there. But yeah, that the 1904 was just a disaster from start to finish.
But the most important thing is,
like history repeating.
Most important thing is the United States won a lot of medals.
Oh, right, yeah, exactly.
It's like 85% of the competitors were American. It's like, oh, we kicked ass.
We won like 230 medals, and yeah. Germany won like, you know, 10 or something like that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, so you wrote in there, I think, that two of the guys that were there from Africa for the World's Fair for the ran in the marathon, so they became the first people from the continent of Africa to compete in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that book, Devil in the White City, by Eric Larson, which is about the World's Fair in Chicago and Daniel Burnham and about the serial killer H.H. Holmes, there's an entire thing in that about them literally shipping in people from all over the world, some of them against their wishes, so they could participate in the exhibits. It's like, oh, for Christ's sakes. I can't, you know, the point that made, I would not have even thought about it until you wrote it, which is, okay, so we have this thing in St. Louis. So you get on a ship and you travel across, you get to somewhere on the Atlantic coast, and then you're like, okay, where's St. Louis?
Right, yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, basically right the distance you just traveled, right. You're going to have to do that again, except there's no water this time.
Right, yeah.
We could take a train that'll almost get you there. Then you could take another train. It'll take you. You got a couple of weeks because we can get you to St. Louis. It's like, oh, great.
Right.
So another month out of my life to go home, too.
My favorite is the Cuban mailman whose entire sort of premise for being in the marathon is that he was a mailman and his route was very long, and so this was the like this gave him the training to compete in an Olympic marathon. This guy got a whole bunch of money from Cubans to crowdfunded to compete in the Olympics, and as soon as his ship comes into New Orleans, he's immediately sucked into a dice game in which he loses all of the money that was raised for him to compete in the Olympics. And so he then has to hitchhike from New Orleans to St. Louis and apparently made it just in time for the race, for which he was completely overdressed, wearing, you know, like a full, you know, like a dress shirt, long pants, Oxfords, a hat. Like, this guy, you know, was dressed for, you know, like a supper club more than he was, you know, the marathon. And of course, you know, he was doing well until he, you know, ate one too many apples, as one does when one runs past an apple orchard, and took a nap, and that was the end of his and that was the end of his race.
Well, it's ironic. I don't know if you know this. Frank Shorter used to run in Oxford.
Is that right?
Yeah. He just liked the look, and he wasn't terribly functional. tried to see if Nike would make him some, but they wouldn't do it. So he just ran him with tips. Could be why he never. I don't think he ever medaled. I did think it was, you know, so Rosie Ruiz obviously is famous for, that was the New York City Marathon, right, where she trimmed a few miles off. Little did we know that that almost a century before, somebody had already tried that stunt in the Olympics.
Yeah. But it's weird how, like, the marathon, like, that sort of collection of people became sort of what marathons become, where you have, like, you know, people in bear suits, you know, like the clowns, and then, you know, people who are cheating, and then, like, these super serious people who are also, like, you know, time trialing to get to the next thing, to get to the next thing that gets them in, like, New York or you know, the U.S. trials or something like that. I'm just like, how the marathon became this sort of, like, populist free for all that, you know, that it doesn't sort of matter your level of running ability, but you can get a piece of this thing that's actually, like, a pretty important sporting event in a way that you can't just, like, you know, shooting hoops at a Bally's Fitness and be like, well, you know, like, if I'm actually, you know, if I make, like, 10 of these in a row, like, I could potentially, you know, make the practice squad for Team USA. It's, like, so weird like that.
Yeah. Like, I can hold my breath underwater for almost a minute. So I would like to swim in the Olympics. It's like, right. That's not... that's
yeah, not put me in the lane next thing. To Lochte.
Yeah. Oh, no, he can't hold his breath for a minute. Yeah, I don't think he needs it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess the last thing I want to ask you is there an athlete that's or an event that's kind of off the radar for these Olympics that you're interested in that you think we should pay, that you're going to give us a tip? Like, ooh, pay attention to this. It's going to be cool.
Well, I have one that's not so off the radar, but I'm interested.
Oh, that's fine. Whatever interests
one,
you.
And one that is interesting
to
me.
Perfect.
The not off the radar is Novak Djokovic going for a Golden Slam. He's, like, the most unstoppable thing in sports right now. Just buzzed through the first three slams of the year. Is the overwhelming favorite to win the U.S. Open. It'd be the first time since Rod Laver that we've had, like, a full calendar slam champion, and the first time ever that we've had a Golden Slam.
Yeah.
So, like, he goes from being the sort of the pesky kid who's sort of breaking up this most lovely rivalry between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal to potentially overtaking them as the greatest of the three of them, not least by virtue of having completed a calendar slam twice in his career. If he gets the U.S. Open and then the gold, which neither of them have gotten in a slam. So that's the not so obvious one, or that's the obvious one. I forget what the categories were. The sort of off the beaten path one is literally near and dear to me. About a quarter mile down the road from me, there's a kid named CJ Cummings who's a 21-year-old weightlifter who happens to be like the third or, you know, best 100 or 73 kilogram weightlifter in the world. And he owns like every American weightlifting record there is in his various weight classes, plus like a slew of world records. And he has a chance to sort of restore some glory to the USA Weightlifting Federation, which has sort of struggled to reprise its former performance enhancing drug glory. And he had a chance to make the team. He had a chance to make Rio as a teenager, but he missed it by like, you know, a handful of points in a competition, and he'd be going into his second Olympics. So he's a guy that, you know, will be a very big deal and very exciting for me here locally in South Carolina and in this community in particular. But he's a really great kid, and I just marvel at how, you know, pretty much since he was a toddler, he has been like singularly focused on becoming an Olympic weightlifter. But then he said once that's done, he wants to be The Rock. He wants to be an actor and jump out of burning buildings and save pretty girls and stuff like that, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah. So the next time you
interview him, not beyond him.
Next time you interview him, ask him, in weightlifting, why can't they just set the weights down? Why do they have to why do they just have to drop them? It's like, you know, somebody else has to lift those weights after you. What if you break one? Just part of it should be, okay, you get it over your head, and then you have to just calmly set it down. You gotta complete. Yeah. See, if it was football, you wouldn't have completed the action of the weight lift until you set the you have to get the weights put back down instead of just dropping them.
Right.
Mostly it's because I know what's gonna happen. People at the Y that I go to are gonna watch the weightlifting, and then for the next month we're gonna have to listen to all of them just drop the weights.
Yeah.
Look at this. No, you don't get to. You're not on the Olympic team. You have to actually put them back on the rack.
Drop the weights and then roar.
Yeah. It's a lot. A lot of weird grunting going on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was fun.
Yeah. Wow. No Bears talk. I'm surprised.
Oh, we do bear talk. Do you want to do bear talk? Let's do bear talk.
I can't say that. What happened? Oh yeah, we drafted a quarterback.
Yeah, they have a quarterback.
It might be good. Yeah, I don't love the Ohio State-ness of it, but I just love that guy was so pissed that he went that late, and I feel like I can work with that. I can work with a guy who's got a grudge. We haven't had many of those.
It was the whole draft was very surreal to me. Because, you know, the Bears had they had underwhelmed. They signed Andy Dalton, which is very close to my name. You just take a T out and move a couple things around, and you got me. Minus the shocking red hair, and it just felt like they're gonna have Andy Dalton and then Nick Foles, and then they're gonna wait till like the fourth round, and they're gonna draft somebody, and we're just gonna be stuck in this thing again. So just watching the draft, you know, typing smart-ass things about what was going on, and you just saw Justin Fields, because there was a whole thing. Well, maybe quarterbacks will go 1, 2, 3. You know, if that happens, then there's not going to be anybody who the Bears would want who's going to slide far enough down for them to jump up, because they were picking 20th, and there was no way they were going to be able to move up into the top five. And so it was the most disinterested. I'm just watching the draft, and then all of a sudden, the bar on the bottom of the screen, you know, with the next pick, turns bright orange, and it says next selection Chicago Bears. And I literally just about shit my pants. I was like, oh my God. And then the only fear was they were going to draft Mac Jones.
Yeah.
It's like, no, now you've got to the right spot and you're going to screw it up by picking the most average barrel-chested dope. And they didn't. They actually picked the guy that was like, oh my God, this might actually work.
Yeah. But the thing I hate about it is that, like, Ryan Pace got a makeup pick. I'm just like, you very clearly made a mistake.
Yes.
Own that mistake. we never should have been in the Mitch Trubisky business. Yeah. You know, like, this was a smart thing, but this is to recover from the very stupid thing that you did before that.
It can never be overstated just what a colossal fuck up the Mitch pick was on so many levels. I mean, stuff we learned about how they really, they talked to Deshaun Watson at the combine. That was it. They were just completely out. They paid a little lip service to Mahomes, but they weren't that. The Bears were not an organization that could look at somebody running that, you know, whatever the, what do they call that ridiculous offense that they run out there?
The spread.
Yeah, but even more of the Mike Leach version of it. That whatever that.
Oh, the I know what you're
talking. Nobody had ever. None of those quarterbacks had ever turned out.
Yeah.
But other coaches were saying that Patrick Mahomes is not. He's no. There's never been anybody like him that ran that offense before.
Yeah.
The Bears were not going to be the team that was going to figure that out. I almost absolved them of the air raid. Exactly.
Yeah.
I almost absolved them of that and was just pissed that they, so they lock in on Mitch and then Pace spends the rest of the draft prep just convincing everybody in the building that Mitch is the pick instead of soliciting ideas and what do you think? It's basically, Mitch is great. Don't you think Mitch is great? I think Mitch is great. You think Mitch is great, right? Don't you think Mitch is great?
Yeah.
And then completely misreading the draft to the point where they felt they had to trade up one spot. Nobody was coming to get Mitch at two. They didn't need to move to two. It was dumb enough they were going to pick him at three. So you've got, and who knows what will happen with Deshaun just because of the whole legal stuff, but you've got a guy who's already going to the Hall of Fame that was picked after Mitch. Deshaun, obviously very good quarterback, much, much better than anything that they had. And the fact that you had your choice and you screwed it up that bad, that should be, that's a fireable offense. You should not be able to survive that.
Yeah, you should not be able to get you. You shouldn't be able to pick again.
And you're 100% right.
The other part that pissed me off, just sort of looking back at the whole situation, was even in Kansas City, which was doing well with Alex Smith, you'd hear the stuff out of training camp that was like, yeah, you know, Alex, you know, he looks great, but this rookie is just doing stuff we have never seen before. Like, it is really a matter of time. Like, the scout team is amazing with this. I don't know where this rookie came from, but holy God, it's like Alex's days are numbered. Like, you just heard that as the Chiefs are like running away with the AFC West. It's this is great, but like, he's just keeping the seat warm.
Yeah, and they gave Mahomes the token start in week 17 because they'd already wrapped up their playoff position.
Right.
And so that got retconned later into them talking about how, well, you know, he wasn't ready. There's a lot of elements of running an NFL offense that he hadn't done, whatever. And then he admitted to that, but then later he clarified it and said, I wasn't ready week one. I would have been ready like week four. I didn't need to sit 16 weeks. I could have. If they needed me after a month into the season, I would have been ready to go. And that's obviously is completely believable when you watch him play. So so there the Bears are, and then so the fear, of course, is that they're just handing Justin Fields over to Matt Nagy, and saying, "All right, now here's you can make this work, right?" When we saw, and you know, with Mitch. I know there was a lot of things they couldn't do because they had Mitch.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they tried to do a lot of shit that he couldn't do. And how much of coaching is taking the players that you have and trying to maximize what they can actually do?
Like throw to the left side of the field?
Right. One little problem with that was his half defense. So on one hand, you can say, all right, Justin Fields is not going to have the limitations that Mitch put on that offense. But the other thing is, how confident are we that Nagy's going to be able to figure out what he really does well and do it? Because he couldn't do it with Mitch. And maybe Mitch was just so limited that you couldn't make that work. But I really would like to have seen them. I'm super glad they have Justin Fields. It's amazing. I'm excited for Bear season that I was not going to be excited for. But I just feel like it would have been so much better if they just handed all of it over to somebody else.
That's the thing that troubles me, is I feel like institutionally, I don't think the Bears have ever had a structure for developing a talented quarterback, even if they're ever, you know, if one ever walked in the building.
They really haven't had anything put in place to have a successful offense, quarterback, right, or anybody. I mean,
like, philosophically, they've never known who they wanted to be as an offense.
This is a franchise who Johnny Morris is still their leading all-time receiver.
Drew,
he caught, he has 5,000 yards. 5,000! We looked it up one time. Jerry Rice had a 2.5 season run where he gained 5,000 yards. And Johnny played 8 years for the Bears, and he's 5,000 yards. It's true that they haven't had a quarterback, but the forward pass was a rumor to them for a very long time.
Well, the thing that kills me and that what sealed it as far as the lack of offensive infrastructure, coaching infrastructure there was when Kyle Orton went to Denver. And I was like, this guy, you're talking like he can't run your rudimentary West Coast offense. He's going to Denver and just lighting it up, you know, throwing bombs to Ashley Lalee and whoever else was there at the time. And I'm just like, the problem isn't with these guys. I'm willing to bet that even a third of these guys could have been workable under the right system or the right circumstances. But it's just, there's so much rot in that organization.
It's it's possible. And we look at
how they even got the first Super Bowl is just amazing. in retrospect.
Well, that's kind of informative. So they, Jim McMahon was a quarterback unlike any quarterback they'd ever tried before. Right. He was a pass first guy. He wasn't terribly big, which ended up being a problem because it was part of the reason he got hurt so much. But he could really throw, and he knew how to throw. He'd been at BYU where they threw all the time.
Right.
And he also had the perfect attitude for the team he was joining because Ditka was going to be this, Ditka was going to be this omnipresent, we're going to do it this way. And they really needed a quarterback who was going to be like, no, that's not going to work. Changing plays in the huddle. And Dicka sends one in, and McMahon's like, that's not going to work. Let's run this. Because the quarterback had to take more ownership with the offense than they'd ever done before because it wouldn't work otherwise.
Yeah.
That's not how it's supposed to work. It's not, your quarterback shouldn't have to freelance for you to have a passing game, but that's really what happened. And it was part of the reason why whenever he would be out, they would be so limited. They won games with Steve Fuller, but that was mostly because the defense was scoring points. But without McMahon, the offense was nowhere near as good as it was. It's just a lot of incompetence. There's no other way to put it. And they did have a really talented quarterback for, I don't know how many years Jay was there, 8 years. And he had his own limitations.
Yeah.
But mostly.
And he was bored. he didn't have a staff that was challenging him in the same way that. Shanahan was.
And they wouldn't prioritize the offensive line. So he was getting annihilated.
Yeah,
and that's why did you trade all those picks to get a quarterback if then you're just going to be like, oh, well, you just have to figure it out because we can't block anybody because we need to spend our money on 9 of the best defensive linemen we could possibly find.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, guys, the defense is good enough. We need to spend money somewhere else.
We need 8 linebackers in addition to making Urlacher the highest paid.
It'll be. There's a lot of talk about, poor Justin Fields. They're going to rush him into the lineup because Nagy and Pace need to save their jobs. They saved their jobs.
Yeah.
They're not getting fired after this year. Yeah. Honestly, the easiest way for them to guarantee that they're back next year is for him to not play. Because they can bank on the promise of Justin Fields for as long as possible. Now, they're not going to do that because at some point, Nagy's not going to be able to look the rest of the team in the eye when they're watching practice and keep running Andy Dalton out there.
Yeah.
But this idea that, well, they're going to rush him because they're going to need to save their jobs. Their jobs, as far as I could tell, their jobs are not in jeopardy. They save their jobs on drafting.
Yeah.
This is not a referendum year. Maybe next year, but this year, they're fine. And then we had the crazy thing where at the end of the season press conference, nobody would admit how many years Nagy and Pace have left on their contracts. They were like, did you sign an extension? Oh, I don't talk about personnel contracts. And even Hub Arkish
well,
is
well, actually,
like,
we're not talking
Hub's
about
like,
personnel. We're
Hub's
talking
like,
about
we're talking about you. How many years is left on your deal? I don't really want to talk about that. So, yeah, we're stuck with these Stooges for another year. All we can do is hope that they, Justin is so good that they can't screw it up.
Yeah.
Not a lot. Yeah. We're not putting that much on poor Justin Fields.
Just got to be another McMahon.
you just have to become the in your first year, you just need to become the second greatest quarterback this franchise has ever had.
In the history of the franchise. Yeah.
And you'll be fine. All right. Well, good. Yeah, I'm glad we talked something other than Olympics. But I really appreciated this. With the Olympics coming up, I wanted to talk to somebody who would know what he was talking about, and you were the first person I thought of.
Wow.
It's certainly not me.
I'm touched.
So let's do this again, and we don't have to wait 15 years.
I'm into it.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you.
We might have a cool Bulls team to talk about this fall. So,
we could. That was another thing, the whole idea that, well, they didn't make the playoffs, the trade was a disaster. It's like, no, you didn't sign him for the rest
really
of
good.
Yeah, in fact, it almost worked out perfect. Where they almost, you know, if the lottery balls had fallen just right, they get Vucevic and they would have had a top four draft pick, which, but it didn't. Yeah, I mean, what they're going to have to do to, I mean, that's probably a topic for, we could do a whole podcast about that. Maybe we should when basketball season rolls around. But the whole idea that all they need to do is find a point guard. It's kind of that simple, but it's not that simple.
Yeah.
It's just not that simple. But yeah, they were. I mean, obviously they had injuries and weird COVID stuff after the trade. But when they were a full unit, they were a lot of fun to watch, which they had not been. So that was great. All right. Well, we'll pick that up some other time then.
Okay. Yeah, that's what we call a tease, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Well, thank you, Drew.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Many of us have herpes.